Thanks for visiting the Whence We Came Project podcast, an archived audio anthology of American lives, both local and legendary, as told by the Americans that live them. The following is my conversation with Bob Whitaker, from Double Springs, Tennessee to the Grand Ole Opry and beyond. It's a fascinating story of twists and turns, and most of all, the amazing importance of listening for, then trusting in, the small, still voice. I hope that you enjoy.
Let's go.
Hello, Mr. Whitaker.
Good morning, John.
How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you very much for allowing me to interview you first on the Whence We Came project that we've just started. I want anyone that ever hears this down the road to fully understand the love and respect I have for you and your wife. And so this is very doubly important to me. As we talked before, I just want to hear the book of Bob. I want to start with kind of where where you're born, when you were born, if you have any memories of grandparents or, you know, great-grandparents or whatever. So let's just begin at the beginning.
Well, first, let me say I appreciate the opportunity to talk about my life. I feel like I've had a very good one, and it's been blessed. So I don't mind sharing, particularly the good things. So I was born in Detroit, Michigan.
Okay.
My father, who was a native Putnam County in Baxter, Tennessee, as a matter of fact, was working in a defense plant in Detroit, Michigan. And I was born in 1941. And at the end of the war, we moved back to Putnam County. And I have great, great fond memories of living in this wonderful area of the world. Even though I live in Goodlettsville, Tennessee, currently, I consider Putnam County my home. And I hope that before the good Lord takes me home, that I'll be back here full time. We actually lived most of my early years in Double Springs. And it just happened that I had two uncles who were farmers, and they lived there, and their names were Charlie and Walter Maxwell. My mother was a Maxwell. My dad, of course, was the son of Joe Walker Whitaker, who was my paternal grandfather. My grandmother, we called them Pappy and Mammy. Mammy was named Belle. And they were just wonderful, down-to-the-earth, solid, good people. The Maxwell side, my paternal side, my grandparents were Jerd and Tina Maxwell. My grandmother was called Tiny, even though her name was Tina. Huh. And they lived what is now the Baxter connection from I-40 all the way to the Coatville Boat Dock. But back in the early days, we had a really tight-knit family. We all went to the same church, both sides of the family. My grandparents Whitaker, my grandparents Maxwell. We went to Lily's Chapel Free Will Baptist Church, and that's where I accepted Christ as my Savior, and attended church there for many years of my life. My dad was a deacon there for 42 years.
Wow.
So that was a very important part of my life. And I will just quickly say, my grandfather, Maxwell, donated the land for that church. And my dad and mom made one of the very first donations to the building fund when that church was built.
Is that church still standing?
It is still standing, and it's still active.
Outstanding.
And I have cousins who are still some of the backbone people in that church.
Outstanding.
I went to church there every Sunday for years, every Sunday night, and also on Wednesday night when that church doors opened. My parents had me and my brothers there. I have two brothers, one older and one younger. My older brother's already gone on to heaven, and He was a great guy, and I miss him, but I wouldn't have him to come back with the illness he had for anything in the world.
Yes, sir.
One of the wonderful memories, back to the church issue, was one Sunday after church, we would go to the Maxwell side of the house, my maternal grandparents. We had Sunday lunch there. All my cousins, we all ended up there on Sunday afternoon, and we had great, great time. And again, when I talk about close-knit family, we would fight for each other, even when we were fighting among ourselves. But we didn't have television. All we had was a radio, and we played games. We did things that we enjoyed doing, and we just became a great close-knit family, and we still are. I visited a cousin yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Outstanding.
Let me kind of jump back to growing up in Double Springs. Very small community. There was probably 15 or 20 families that lived just in the immediate area of Double Springs. We walked to school, Double Springs Elementary School, and that was about a mile. And, of course, my children will say, oh, yeah, and you walked a mile and a half every day in the snow and the rain and barefooted at that.
Right.
Well, sometimes we were barefooted. It was a wonderful... I look back on it, and I considered a wonderful beginning to my education. I should say my formal education, because my parents were very instrumental in teaching us, particularly the right things, the right way to live, and what we should do and not do. I will never forget my first grade teacher was Miss Callie Melton. Wonderful, wonderful person. And she taught me the love for reading. And I can see her visually right now. She was just a charming, petite, lovely lady. But her personality was even better. And she inspired our school, and particularly the younger students, to just learn and to grow and to continue our education. I'm going to jump forward just a little bit. In 1993, I was promoted to the president and general manager of the Grand Ole Opry, and of course, there was some publicity went out, and the Herald, local paper here, carried a story, and just a couple of days later, I get a handwritten letter from Callie Melton.
Wow.
Now, you have to remember, I started school in 1947-48, and this is in 1993.
Wow.
She wrote me a letter congratulating me and telling me how proud she was of me and that she knew that I would achieve some certain amount of success even back when she was teaching me in the first grade.
That's amazing.
The most incredible thing about that, though, the nice words were wonderful, but she sent me a picture, not a photocopy, but a picture of my first grade class, and an individual picture of me from 1948.
She had all those years.
She had held on to that all of these years. And I'm sure I wasn't the only one that she kept pictures of, but I just thought, wow.
That's remarkable.
What a wonderful love this lady had for her students.
And I think oftentimes we don't know, as you have done for me and my family and my children and my grandchildren, I think oftentimes we don't really fully realize the impact that we have on others, especially people like yourself that just give, give, give. I have a question for you about the elementary school, though. How many grades were in Double Springs Elementary?
Eight. Two rooms.
First through eight and two rooms.
Yes.
How did that work?
Well, Mrs. Melton had grades 1 through 4, or maybe it was 1 through 5, and then at that time, Mrs. Matheny, and her husband was Nashaw Matheny, and he was the highway patrolman.
The highway patrolman
for the district.
That's amazing.
And Mrs. Matheny was the teacher for the older grades. And I don't remember exactly how many students there was in my class. I'm guessing there was probably 7 in that first grade class.
Yes, sir.
But there was 5 of us when we finished the 8th grade, and all 5 of us went to high school. And all 5 of us graduated from high school.
Wow.
And I think 4 of us graduated from college.
Wow. Amazing.
So, that was really, when I look back on that, I'm thinking that's incredibly important. And we had pot-bellied stove, and the students... In our classroom, and the older students in the wintertime would come in early, and they would build the fire. We didn't have custodial people then.
Right.
In this rural elementary school.
Well, how did she teach the different grades all in the same room? How did that work?
She taught all of us. I mean, literally, when you think about it, here's a first grader. I'm a first grader here. And then when she goes to the next class with math, all of a sudden, I'm seeing what happens in the next year when I move to the second grade. And by the time I get to the second grade, if I have been paying attention, I'm going to breeze right through the second grade math class.
Wow.
And then I also heard what happened in the third grade
right.
If I didn't lose concentration.
Yes, sir.
And I have to admit, I wasn't the greatest student in the world. But when you hear English being taught to three more grades.
Sure.
You pick up some of it.
Right.
And you know, we talk about small classrooms. Those 4 grades probably didn't number more than 25 or 30 people. And we're all in there in a cluster. And when she's writing on the board for the other classes, we're seeing it.
Yes, sir.
So,
well, I'm sorry to have interrupted, but that's fascinating.
I hadn't even thought about that question, John. But I think that's kind of an important issue when you think about the education system. Those teachers prepared us for high school.
Right.
And we went on to high school and we did well. And then while we're talking about education, I should also say I've often expressed to my friends and other people that I felt like I had a pristine high school education. Again, not that I was a great student, but Cookeville Central High School at that time, and it adjoined the university campus. You know, we could walk right out of our classroom, and we had access to the library at Tennessee Tech.
While you were in high school?
While we were in high school.
Wow.
We had access to all of that, and many of our teachers in high school were spouses of the professors at the university. So we had that tie. And we had great student teachers that came over from the university to us. I mean, brilliant young people who were going into the education field. I was interested in music, and I played in the band, and I learned to play several brass instruments while I was in the band. And Dr. J. Julian, who was a famous band director and head of bands, went on and go to the University of Tennessee. But he was at Tennessee Tech when I was in high school.
I didn't realize that. I know of him, but I didn't realize that.
And we saw him often at our band room. And he was very strict. And he started band camps at the university. And we high school students, he let us come over and be part of those camps. And we got free tuition because we'd come over and set up the band room, open the doors, and do all of the stuff that somebody had to do.
Right.
And that's a whole another story that we need to talk about. J. Julian is a character. Dr. Julian was brilliant. He was a wonderful guy. And even after I became a professional at Opryland, I had a connection with him through band camps at Opryland. At any rate, I'll go back to high school.
Welcome back to Whence We Came. Now please join us as we continue our conversation with Mr. Bob Whitaker.
At any rate, I'll go back to high school. I had a great experience, and I'll say again, Dr. Luster was a great band director. He taught us music. He taught us to appreciate classical music as well as marching music. And
a question for you on that: where was Central High School at that time located?
It's on 10th Avenue, right where I think it's a junior school there now.
Okay, that's where my son went to junior high school. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that was the high
school. Wow, I didn't realize
that. That was the high school at that time.
And see, what's so funny, that's another blessing from these conversations. I, as you know, you knew my mother and my uncle. They both went and graduated from that school.
Right.
But I had never thought, they're both passed, I had never thought while they were living to ask them, where is that school? It's neat for me now. Every time I pass that, I'll think back on that. So thank you.
I have to say it was so convenient for us. If there was an event going on at the university that we had an opportunity to go, like the ballet would come in.
Right.
Boom.
Wow.
We have an opportunity to go do that, you know.
In a small town in Tennessee, to have that kind of culture in a high school is remarkable.
It was just incredible. And, of course, we did concerts and we did vocal concerts. I debated in high school. I did oratory in high school. I was not a good math student. And Miss Del Terry, God love her, she would tell you that she got very frustrated with me. I think about W.C. Moore, who taught history, and he taught American history and world history, and anybody who had history under him thought it was the weirdest thing in the world, but you never forgot what he taught. Example, Ma of Frisia. He might put on his test, whoa, kittens. That would be the question, or the key to the answer. He'd say, whoa, kittens. That was Ma of Frisia, who had a chariot drawn by lions.
Oh, my gosh.
So you never forgot stuff like that.
Sure.
And he would say, Johnson's nursery. Well, that was the Babylonian gardens.
That's amazing. So, those tie-ins, that's funny that now, so many years later, you remember those.
I'll never forget that. One of the reasons I would never forget him, though, I told you I wasn't a great student. My older brother, 6 years older than I, he was a terrific student. And one of the things that I always kind of resented was they all expected me to do the same thing my brother Harold did.
Yes, sir.
And I kind of resented that a little bit. Mr. Moore could sit on his front of his desk, and at when grade card time would come, he could sit up there and he could flip it and almost land it on every desk in the room. And I'll never forget this one time he was throwing out the cards, and he opened mine up and he said, "Whit, if I was your dad, I wouldn't let you in the house." And I responded quickly, "Mr. Moore, if you were my dad, I wouldn't want in the house."
Outstanding. How did he react?
And he said, "Out." Out, and he had a chair sitting right outside of his door. And when you went out, you didn't go down the hall. You sat right in
there.
That chair. And it was funny. He would always walk to the door when class was over, and he'd open the door, stand by it, till every member of the class passed out. And when they had all gone, he broke into the biggest laugh, and he said, "That's the funniest comeback I've ever had, but I couldn't let you get by with it."
That's outstanding.
And years later, at a class reunion, he was there, and he remembered that.
He remembered it.
So, at any rate, I think that's important to have that kind of rapport with students and friends and neighbors, is that
right.
You can make a remark like that. Hmm. You have to pay the consequences. But it was levity, and it was forgotten at that moment. but it lasts forever.
In some ways appreciated, yes.
So,
sir.
At any rate, and I could tell you a dozen stories about other teachers. Pauline Hutchins, I loved. Del Terry was my math teacher. Lottie Farr was my freshman English teacher. And Mrs. Pinkerton was the debate coach. And she was tough, but she made us work. And that was good for all of us.
What other high schools were in this area? Like when you were debating or playing ball or whatever else, what other high schools were in this area?
Monterey had a high school. Baxter had a high school.
Okay.
Let me tell you, Mrs. Pinkerton's husband was also the debate coach at the university.
Oh.
And so we debated all over. Debated in Sparta, debated in Springfield, debated in Nashville, you know, all of the schools. But we had two guys, David King and Bill Carrington. They were national debaters. They won state championships almost every year during school. And I never achieved their level of competence. But they were incredible, and they set a high bar. And so they debated everywhere.
Wow.
I mean, nationally.
That's amazing. Well, and something else, too. You said your older brother was 6 years older than you?
Yeah.
So you were never in school with him, right?
No.
How about your younger brother?
Actually, that's not true. We were in college together.
Oh, that's, okay.
Because Harold did not go immediately to college. He worked for a couple of years and then came back to college. And then when I graduated, we were in school together there for at least his senior year.
Outstanding. And your younger brother, how much younger?
He was 22 months younger than I.
Oh, very close.
And we were in school together, and he lives in Chattanooga now. And we just had a conversation yesterday. We still talk on a regular basis. And he was an athlete in the family. Played football and played baseball. And so we had it was just three brothers, good siblings.
Yes, sir. That's outstanding. Well, tell me a bit about, so you graduated from Central High School.
Yes.
And then you decided to go to Tennessee Tech University.
Yeah, and that's another story that I should tell. I had a scholarship, Dr. Julian, to major in music at the university. And I thought that that's what I was going to do. I was going to major in music. And 2 weeks before I entered my freshman year, I had a reality check. I realized that I was a technical musician, meaning I had learned to press a certain vowels on a trumpet or a French horn or whatever. But I realized that I was not a gifted musician. I could read any score. I could read a classical score. I could play all the notes. I could do all of that stuff. And when I made that discovery that, hey, you're a technical musician, you're not gifted. Yes, I could have probably joined a band. I could have probably played weekends in some bar somewhere. I could have maybe been a teacher. I might have even been able to be a musical director or something in a church with a degree in music. But I was still a technical musician and not gifted. And living this close to Nashville, Tennessee, the recording industry and all that stuff's going on, that's what you see. And I'm thinking, no, I'm not good enough to go into the studio. I can't do that. I don't have a solo career. You need to get another degree.
To be that self-aware at 17, 18 years old is remarkable.
I think the good Lord taught me that lesson. I really do, because I loved music and I wanted to do that. But 2 weeks, and I think that's the incredible thing, 2 weeks before that reality check set in and said, hey, don't waste 4 years of college.
Yes, sir.
Get you a degree that you can earn a living with. So I got a degree in business with emphasis on psychology and human resources. And my first job out of college, I went to work for the Ford Glass Plant in Nashville, Tennessee, in the Industrial Relations Department. And that got me started on a career in human resources. It was personnel management then. Human resources, a modern term. And back then it was personnel and industrial relations or labor relations. And that's how I got to OperaLAM, which may be another story.
Yes, sir. I'm going to have to hear that story. But very quickly on the tech part now, the years you were at tech, would that have been during the Korean War?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it was.
Tell me about that and this that time in this area and at university.
Well, we had ROTC at the university then, and the first 2 years, male students had to be in ROTC.
Had to be. I did not know that.
Had to be in ROTC. You know what? Maybe I need to correct that. I'm pretty sure that's true.
Yes, sir.
But I joined into ROTC and enjoyed it. And when I got to be a junior, I wanted to sign up for advanced ROTC, which meant that I would go the next 2 years, and then I would go into the military service for a couple of years.
Yes, sir.
We were during the Korean conflict. And as it turned out, when I signed up for the junior year advanced ROTC, I had to go to Nashville and get the Army physical exam.
Yes, sir.
And so I went, and unfortunately I had hearing problems and eventually lost all the hearing in my right ear, and so I failed the physical.
Oh, wow.
So I couldn't go into advanced ROTC. And I said to the doctor who failed me, and I said, what does this mean? That I can't hear well enough to be an officer, but I can hear well enough to be a grunt and dig ditches.
Right.
Oh. He said, no, you're not going to do any of that.
Either of those, yes, sir.
So I was looking forward to that.
Yes, sir.
And as it turned out, I did not have any military experience. My older brother, however, was in the National Guard. But he did not have to do active duty during the Korean conflict.
Yes, sir.
So,
what was Cookeville like during that time, or this area?
If you know, as I think about it, I think there was about 7,000 citizens or in the city of Cookeville.
Oh, wow!
I think we were a small community. Everybody knew everybody. You walked down the street, called everybody by their first name. We knew when somebody had a birthday. We knew when somebody had a new baby in the family. We knew all of that stuff.
Yes, sir.
I would walk from the high school in the afternoon over to the square, and Poppy Brown had a pool hall right on the corner of Spring and Jefferson. And we teenagers could go in there, and we could shoot pool for a nickel a rack.
Wow.
Till 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock's when the big boys came in.
Oh, I see.
So we were escorted out.
Got cleared out, yes, sir.
At 5 o'clock.
That's outstanding.
there's so many wonderful memories about that this city. You know, I would go to the drugstore right there on the square, and I'll never forget. I would go in, and I'd sit down, and I'd get a dish of vanilla ice cream and a bag of barbecue potato chips, and I think I paid 20 cents for it.
Wow. Now, was it actually a soda fountain
a
there
soda
like
fountain.
You hear
Absolutely.
About, read about?
It was a soda fountain.
That's amazing.
And that was on the corner of Broad and Jefferson, right across from Robertson's clothing store.
Amazing.
So,
well, I interrupted you. So you've graduated from tech, and you've gotten the job in Nashville.
I actually had dropped out of school for a personal reason and money and whatever. And I went to work professionally for the Boy Scouts. in Nashville. I was a district executive in the West District. I loved it.
Welcome back to Whence We Came. Now please join us as we continue our conversation with Mr. Bob Whitaker. Had you been in the Boy Scouts growing
up? No, we didn't have Boy Scouts in Devil Springs.
Yes, sir. Wow.
I'd never been a scout, but I got a job, and it was a district executive, and I was responsible for the programming and the fundraising and the camping and all that stuff in the West District of Nashville, which included Belmead, Westmead, and Hillsboro, and that area, which was kind of fortunate for me. I didn't know it at the time, but the volunteers in that district were people who were in high positions in different companies in the Nashville area.
Yes, sir.
One being the chairman of the National Life and Accident Insurance Company. How was that important? They owned WSM Radio and the Grand Ole Opry and all of that stuff.
Yes, sir.
In 1961, when I went to Nashville, I did not realize that my career was going to end up over in that area. In 1963, I woke up and I said to my wife at that time, I had married Diane Spicer, and we'd been married a couple of years, and I said, I need to go back and finish college. Didn't know how I was going to make that work, but I did. Came back to Cookeville. I drove a school bus. To earn money, and that gave me transportation from my home to Cookeville High School, parked the bus in Central High School's parking lot, and walked over to the university.
Wow.
And then came back, picked up students at 3 o'clock, delivered them, and then drove back home.
Lord. Amazing.
So, you know, I need to probably say this now. I truly believe that every major decision that I made during my life, I think it was a directive or in control of the Heavenly Father.
Yes, sir.
I believe that with all my heart.
I wrote the word down here, epiphanies. It seems like you have these epiphanies. But I have a question for you. I'm an older man as well, not quite. I consider you a mentor. But did you know that at the time? When did you become aware of that you really thought it was God? Did you know it at the time, or?
I think I had a realization as a early teenager.
Yes, sir.
It was one of those situations that I had an issue with our church. I might as well tell it.
Sure.
I was at Lillis Chapel Free Baptist Church. My father was a deacon. My family, my grandparents, everybody that was family was in that church. And I took a friend from high school home with me for the weekend, and he went to church with us. And it just happened to be communion Sunday. And at that time, and it wasn't just in that church, but a lot of churches, they felt like that communion was close-knit just for that denomination and just for that group and so forth. And so the pastor made it pretty clear during his introduction of communion that only the Baptists were supposed to take communion. And I've got a Methodist friend sitting next to me, and I refused communion.
Wow.
My dad kept sticking it in my face because he was serving.
Right.
And I refused it. And on the way home, he said, son, we need to have a talk when we get home. And we did. He took me out on the back porch and he said, you refuse communion. Why? And I said, Dad, I didn't feel worthy. He said, you didn't feel worthy? I said, no, I didn't. I said, you have to understand that was one of the instructions. Find yourself worthy to take the body and the blood of Christ.
Right.
And I said, I didn't feel worthy. And he said, why not? And I said, anger in my heart. He
wow.
said, anger? I said, yes. And I said, at whom? I said, at the church. And I explained to him how I felt about that. And we went and visited the pastor after lunch, left my friend sitting there with my brothers and my mom.
And your dad, father took you.
And then I went to visit the pastor.
Wow.
And he said to me, he said, Bob, that's our church doctrine. That's the way our convention believes.
The pastor said this.
The pastor said that to me, and I said,
yes,
sure, Pastor, if you can show me one place in the Bible where only Baptists or any other one denomination is exclusive to the communion, then I'll get in front of the church next Sunday, and I'll forgive, I'll repent, and I'll ask the church to forgive me, if you can show me that.
And how did he react?
He said, I can't show you that.
Right.
I said, then it's man's rule, not God's rule.
And you were how old?
I was 14. I was a freshman in high school.
That is remarkable.
So, and Dad and my mom understood exactly where I was with that. And I asked them if it was okay if I went to another church. Perhaps I shouldn't have done that because I was still harboring.
Right.
As it turned out, I went to the First Baptist Church in Cookeville, who had open communion.
Well, it says something to your parents allowed you to do that as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that was another thing that I admired about my parents. Back in the late 40s and early 50s, they were very, very strict rules, particularly in our family. My grandparents didn't really appreciate me wearing shorts or going without a shirt.
Wow. Okay, I didn't realize that.
And I'm not so sure that my mom and dad really liked it, but they did not keep us from doing it.
Yes, sir.
You know, they honored that. It was like going to movies. Members in that strict religious set, they didn't think going to the movies was the right thing to do. But my parents allowed us because our generation, our culture, that was one of the things to do.
Right.
Was go. I went to the Princess Theater.
Wow.
You know, so.
Now were your parents highly educated? Were they a bit more educated than some other folks around?
Why? No. Dad finished the second grade. But he was so wise.
Absolutely.
Dad was such a smart man. He could do almost anything. And my mother, she went to the freshman year in high school. And one of the things I'm really proud of, when she was 72, she went back and got her GED.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
What prompted that?
She just wanted to do it.
Wow.
And 72. She did not tell my brothers and I that she was doing that because she didn't want to embarrass us or so forth. But when we found out about it, it was when she graduated and got her GED.
That's wonderful.
Well, we threw a party for her.
Outstanding.
So it was, they were such good people. And they loved their neighbors. My mother would take food to people who didn't have food. I remember her taking bed ticking and fill it full of clean straw and taking it to a poor family who were sleeping on the floor.
Wow.
I've seen her bring little girls into our house, and they had lice, and she would wash their hair and cut their hair and treat them for.
Come from good stock.
They were just wonderful, caring people.
And it's kind of amazing too, Mr. Whitaker. I know, speaking with my father before he passed, he said one time we were talking about some people in his community. Dad was born in 29, so he had five sisters. And so my grandfather and grandmother had six children, and my grandfather was a coal miner. And during the Depression, it was in Palmer, Tennessee. It was pretty tough. But Dad made a comment to me while he was still well, and he said, John, poor today is not like what poor was when I was younger. And it shows the elevation of blessing that we've had as a nation to begin with.
Absolutely.
But
but even so, those people, I guess in some people's eyes, my family was quite wealthy.
Sure.
But my mother worked public works. My dad worked public works. We lived on a small tract of land. We lived out of the garden. We didn't get indoor plumbing until I was 13 or 14.
Let's think about that.
I had chores to do. I milked cows. I gathered eggs. I fed the chickens. My brothers, we swapped up. We did different things. One of the things that I am really proud of is my mother allowed me to get in the kitchen with her. She cooked on a wood-burning stove. She would allow me in the kitchen, and I would make messes, and she would, while she was cooking and what have you. But I learned to cook at my mother's feet. She was a fabulous country cook.
Well, I will tell you, I'm going to have to interject. Having eaten some of your food, you as well are a fabulous cook.
Well, I created a love for cooking when I was 8, 9, and 10 years old.
Yes, sir.
And my dad actually built me a stool that I could stand on so I could reach the counter.
Oh.
And mother tolerated me in her way, you know.
It blessed her.
I told my younger brother, we were walking home from school, and I said, okay, you're going to have to do the chores tonight. You're going to feed the chickens, do everything that's got to be done, get wood in for the wood-burning stove, because I'm going to cook dinner for Mom and Dad tonight. And I cooked my first meal at 11 years old, and bless their hearts, they ate it.
That's funny.
So, and I've been cooking ever since.
Yes,
I cooked breakfast this morning. I cook basically every meal in this house and have all my life. One of the things that happened when I moved away from home and went to Nashville to work for the Boy Scouts, Jerry Keithley and I were roommates, and I loved to cook, but I wanted to expand my culinary skills. So I subscribed to Gourmet Magazine, and I put a mason jar on my nightstand, and every night when I would come home, I would put my change in that mason jar. And generally speaking, at every month, when the new magazine would come out with the new recipes, and it was called the menu of the month, I would generally have enough change in that mason jar that I could go out and buy the ingredients to cook the menu of the month.
Oh, wow.
And that's how I learned to do semi-gourmet food, you know.
Yes, sir.
But I cooked stuff that I'd never heard of. We didn't have that kind of stuff at Double Springs, Tennessee.
Amazing.
And we didn't grow it on the farm.
Right.
But I had been cooking all my life, since I was 11 years old, and I still enjoy going into the kitchen and doing it. And I hope I never lose that.
I don't think so.
But I think that's just a testament to how our family was and how the community around us was. We shared gardens. You know, if there was something that was great in somebody else's garden in that little Double Springs community, we had it. If somebody had a cow that had gone dry and we needed milk, they would give us milk.
Right.
Yeah. If someone was sick and they needed somebody to set up with, the families would all get together and they would divide it up. We'll stay with them this day and we'll stay with them that day. My mother and two other ladies started the hot lunch program in Double Springs Elementary School.
That is remarkable.
And they would cook lunch for us every day.